o'clock and time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Anne Reid is one of our most acclaimed and admired actors. As Valerie Tatlock, later Mrs. Ken Barlow in Coronation Street, and Jean in Dinner Ladies, Anne was for many years a constant presence in millions of homes. In many ways, her career has enjoyed a second wind, with wonderful performances in, for example, Cemetery Junction and The Mother, in which she had an affair with, as it were, James Bond, since the actor was Daniel Craig. He was playing your daughter's boyfriend.
My daughter's boyfriend, yes, the builder who was doing the kitchen in the house, yes. He wasn't James Bond then.
No,
course.
I know, but
no, he
but
hadn't
still.
Done that. Yes, it was very exciting. It was a wonderful part. It wasn't much of a stretch, I have to tell you. Somebody once said to me, Adam Godley, an actor called Adam Godley, once said to me, the things that make you the most successful are the things that you find the easiest. And I really didn't find that very difficult because it was a wonderful script and it wasn't too far from me. I talked to a lot of women in their 60s and asked them what they thought about having an affair with a younger man. I never had a problem with it, but I think Daniel was very brave to do that.
Well, I think he enjoyed it too.
Certainly
seemed to. Has music, Anne, been something you've always loved?
Yes, so always. I was brought up on really Sigmund Romberg and Vivian Ellis and, you know, things. My mother loved things like The Maid of the Mountains and New Moon and things like that. And my experience of and my love of music first came from really the radio and from films, because we didn't play much classical music when I was a child. But I used to go to films or listen to the radio and I always remembered the music. I often didn't, you know, remember the film, but I remembered the music. And this first piece, The Wasps Overture, when I was a small girl, I was growing up in Redcar. I was born in Newcastle and in the war, we went to Redcar. My father was away in the army and my two elder brothers were in the Navy. My youngest brother was a teenager. I was a late mistake. And my mother and I used to listen to the radio a lot. I mean, people can't imagine now how important the radio was, not just for news, but the serials that were on, things like Dick Barton's Special Agent. We used to rush home from school to hear that. And every Sunday there would be a serial. And I remember sitting on my mother's knee listening to The Count of Monte Cristo in a big blue velvet armchair in Redcar. And this music was the theme music. And I just fell in love with it then and I've always adored it.
It's rather good to set that kind of scene, this music. It's a Vaughan Williams Overture to the Wasps and it has that kind of busy intent about it.
Yes, they used to play that wonderful haunting theme to open each episode. And then at the end, they would just play the last few bars of the whole thing.
We can afford ourselves the luxury of hearing the whole thing.
Thank you. can still see that big blue velvet armchair. Can't believe it was so long ago.
That was the Overture to the Wasps, played by the Halle Orchestra, conducted by Sir John Barbirolli. You mentioned just before, Anne Reed, that the mother was relatively easy for you to do.
Well, acting's always hard. I mean, it's
well, I was going
it,
to
it's
say
harder than it looks. But what I'm saying is, it wasn't a huge stretch for me because I played Barbara Cartland, and that was a big stretch, and I loved doing it. But often, you know, things you really have to pull something out of yourself.
That was going to be my question. Which roles, you know, conversely did you find really difficult?
Ladies of Letters, that I did with Maureen Lipman on the television, was monologues. I mean, it was just a question of learning so much, pages and pages and pages. I'm really proud of myself that I managed to learn them, and I know Maureen is too, because I've never had so much to learn, and it was just you to camera. That was really hard. I mean, everything is difficult in its own way. I love the theatre. I adore the theatre, but then you see you get rehearsal for that. I've just done a series with Derek Jacobi, and that was a lot of learning. But, you know, you arrive on the day. It's like you turn up with a pie, you know, and say, like, you've cooked it and say, this is what I've made. And there's no time to change it or rehearse it or do it. You know, just have to have it ready.
What's that about, that series?
Oh, it's called Last Tango in Halifax. It's about a couple who meet when they knew each other when they were at school. And they separated, and then their grandsons put them both on the internet, and they meet again and start a relationship late in life. And it was enormous fun. Derek Jacob is a sweetheart.
And that'll be on television. Won't We look forward to that. You mentioned your childhood, but you did play the piano, didn't you?
Yes, I started learning from a very early age. My mother had to make me practice. She would threaten to take me away from ballet classes, which I loved. And now I'm so grateful to her because I play all the time. Not well, but it's my solace always, my piano. When I was at boarding school, I once had to play for the school in a half-term concert of Debussy Arabesque, and I broke down in the middle and couldn't find my place in the music and started to weep. And the teacher had to come out of the audience and sit with me and get me through it. And I thought, I will never play for anybody again, never in public. And I still find it really hard. And this piece, April, was the last piece that I was learning as I was leaving school. And I managed to crack the first three pages. And my teacher said to me, now, when you leave, you must go on and you must learn the rest of it and you must keep working. But I didn't have a piano at that time. I didn't have a piano until I went into Coronation Street. And that was the first thing I bought in about the first 3 weeks. And I knew I'd got to work for 6 months. I went and bought a piano. And so this is April, which I would love to have been able to play. And I think I can manage about the first two pages now.
Thank you.
April by John Ireland, played by Eric Parkin. That school you mentioned, that boarding school, part of the reason for going there, I think, was because your parents moved away, or your mother went to join your father.
Yes, that's right. My dad had been in Beirut during the war in the intelligence corps, and he spoke Arabic. He was a journalist before he went into the army. And after the war, my father became foreign correspondent for the Daily Telegraph, and he and my mother had been separated during the war for so long that naturally she wanted to go with him, and what were they going to do with me? So I went to boarding school and used to fly out to wherever they happened to be. I went to Delhi to visit them in the plane of a Maharaja. I know that's much too long a story to tell here, but my dad met these two pilots in a bar who were going to, in Calcutta, who were going to fly this plane out. Rather cavalier way, he said, "Can you bring my daughter?" And I was sort of 12. It took us a week to get to India.
But that could have been quite a traumatic experience for a child. But it obviously was a rather wonderful time for you, that school. You enjoyed it, didn't you?
I think I was quite a tough little girl. It made me very independent. When I went to Delhi, my dad was off on assignment somewhere in Burma. And Mum and I went to the movies a lot, to the films. And as I said, that's where I picked up a lot of my classical music. And I remember we used to go and see a lot of Abbott and Costello films, which I was passionate about. And then we went to see this wonderful film called, a Max Ophuls film called Letter from an Unknown Woman, with Joan Fontaine and Louis Jourdan. It was about a young girl's love affair with a concert pianist, and this is what he played, and I just fell in love with it. And many years later, Robin Ray, do you remember Robin Ray, who was on the television? He was a friend of mine, and I didn't know what this music was called, and he played it to me one day, and I said, "Ah, what is that?" Then I found out the name.
Thank you.
It was such a sad film. I used to cry for days whenever I thought about it.
It's a very romantic piece.
Yes.
And actually, given all those arpeggios, if you'd said to me earlier that it was you'd not got past the first two pages of that, I think I would understand.
This? Yes. I couldn't possibly. No. I mean, I don't play. I play Gershwin and Cole Porter now. Mm-hmm. I love classical music, but I don't want to listen to me playing it. Not now.
But that was wonderful playing by Claudio Rau. And it was Un Sospiro by Liszt, which is number 3 from the 3 Etudes de Concert. And you sort of stopped acting for a while, didn't you, one period in your life?
Yes, when I became pregnant, I decided that I wanted to be at home with my son. We lived in Manchester then, and my husband was head of drama at Granada Television. During the 70s, he had a huge effect on the drama department. They, and all things like Brideshead and Jewel in the Crown all came under my husband's time there. Anyway, when my son was 2, my husband became ill and really was ill most of my son's childhood. So I couldn't work then. My mother was ill, and so I just gave up the business for quite a long time. My husband died when he was only 45.
Gosh.
And yes, it's incredible now, it's so young. So it was really about 12, 14 years that I had a gap then. At the most important years for an actress, really, between sort of 36 to 50, I just didn't do anything, really.
But all the more remarkable that you've had such a successful career since.
I know, aren't I lucky? It gets better and better.
Well, if I may say it, you've been very good, that's why.
Oh, and well, you've probably got what you deserve. It's still a lot of luck in it.
Eric Coates is a composer who very much held sway. And I think around that time when you were probably listening to the radio a lot, and his light music in particular,
yes,
is actually extremely good.
The light programme, it is. Yes, yes, it is. This is not where this... I don't know where this comes from. I just had a cassette in the car with a lot of Eric Coates and the Three Elizabeths Suite, which this comes from. It's quite appropriate, this Jubilee year, which the first one is Elizabeth I, Princess Elizabeth, as she was then, and then Elizabeth of Glamis was the Queen Mother. The reason I love it is it's just that it is a beautiful picture of Scotland, and you can see the heather and hear the birds and things. And I've recently discovered that my great-great-grandfather lived in Fife, so I'm quite keen on all things Scottish at the moment. It's just a beautiful piece of music.
Thank you.
That cadence has a rather Lark Ascending-like feel
yes,
to it.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Yes, it does.
Springtime in Angus, Elizabeth of Glamis, from the Three Elizabeth Suite by Eric Coates. We heard the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Reginald Kilby, and Richard Weigel played the solo oboe. You've mentioned how two pieces of music already came to you, really, because you saw a film and they added something. It must be very interesting for you as an actor, because music can completely change the tone of something, and it's very often added on at the last moment. So quite often, I imagine, you go and see something you've been in and then hear it with the music.
Yes, it's terrifically important to me. I think if I had my life again, I wouldn't be an actress. I would try and get into a music college. It's always where my heart is. I always notice the music in things and, you know, when they jar, when they don't work.
A great friend of yours, I think, is Barbara Cook.
Oh, well, where do I start? Well, yes, Barbara has absolutely changed my life. I was a fan. I saw her on the television, and then in 1986, I saw her live at the Donmar, and I was completely blown away. I think she's the best, most wonderful talent that I've ever seen. She's a terrific actress who happens to have a glorious voice, and I think she could have had a career as an actress if she hadn't been a singer. I just became obsessed. I went to everything, every concert, and I go to New York all the time to see her. And then about 14 years ago, we became very close friends, and I see her a lot. I didn't know what to choose of Barbara's, but this shows how she can make you cry one minute and she can make you laugh the next and still has this beautiful, beautiful sound. I think she's this absolutely nobody like her.
All I want is a plain man, a modest man, a quiet man, a straightforward and honest man with habits that do not exclude the occasional reading of a book. I do not yearn for, nor do I wait, any handsome hand-kissing, wine-tasting, silk pillow hookah smoker. No world traveler in fact or fancy, no show-off, no clothes horse. He need not necessarily be in uniform. I await no clean-cut, weather-beaten, square-rigged, white duck pants and tennis shoes. No plumed hat, no splendid insignia, no moose, elk, eagle, art fellows, national guardsman, fire chief or highlander. Be he from the Arabian Nights or the French Foreign Legion. No Lothario shoe salesman, no band leader, no railroad conductor or any other charmer, either of me or anybody else. No Chautauqua advance agent, no vaudevillian, no depot telegrapher. I'm not dazzled over any such a kind of fascinating flame. All I want is a plain man, a modest man, a quiet man, a straightforward and honest man to sit with me in a cottage somewhere in the state of Iowa and listen with a smile to a poem or a song that is neither a five-line limerick about St. Peter and a man from Duluth or a sing-song lament of a purple cow. And not every day, but just occasionally, we could walk down by the meadow in the twilight sprinkled dew. My white knight can be blacksmith, well digger, clerk, or king. All I want is a plain man, a modest man, a quiet man, a straightforward and honest man with habits that do not necessarily include the chewing of snuff or exploding root beer in the cellar every June. And I would like him to be more interested in me than he is in himself, and more interested in us than in me. If occasionally he'd ponder what makes shake. I could love till I die. My white knight, never Lancelot, nor an angel with wings, just someone to love me, who is not ashamed of a few nice things. My white knight, let me walk with him where the others ride by, walk and love him.
Oh, boy. Doesn't get any better than that. It's superb, isn't it? Absolutely superb.
The one and only Barbara Cook with My White Knight from Meredith Willson's The Music Man. That was from her album Live at Carnegie Hall. New York, Anne Reed, I think, actually, is where you heard the next music. I think you were taken by Barbara Cook to one of those marvellous jazz clubs in New York.
Yes, the Blue Note Jazz Club. And she said, you must come and hear this wonderful trumpeter called Chris Botti, who is a protege of Sting's, actually. And Sting was in the audience the night we were there. And I've never really been into the trumpet before, but I just think this young man is brilliant. And this just shows the simplicity and the beauty of the sound he makes. It's glorious, I think. The first time I heard that, I played it about 10 times, over and over and over. It's just glorious and a beautiful sound.
Curious how those particular intervals on the trumpet conjure up a feeling of America. It's more like Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common
Yes.
Man. And in fact, even in Appalachian Spring are pieces like that.
Yes, I hadn't thought of that. Yes, you're quite right.
We heard Deborah's theme from Once Upon a Time in America by Ennio Morricone, played by Chris Botti. We're going to finish with another connection, very strong connection for you, to your time with your husband in Granada, because I think this was something he loved.
Yes, I'm a huge Bill Evans fan. It might seem to people listening to the music that I've chosen that I'm rather a melancholy person. I'm not at all, but I seem to like music with a dying fall, I think Shakespeare said.
I mean, I think it's wonderful having music with humour and that's light. But on the other hand, if we're plumbing more profound depths, then we tend to have music that is more cathartic.
Mm. My husband, Peter Eckersley, had never heard Bill Evans until I introduced him to his music. And I've got about 40 CDs of Bill Evans. And then Pete went to America and came back with, it was an LP of Left to Right. And on the end, the last track is the children's play song. And he was then doing a series, or planning to do a series at Granada called Childhood, I think was introduced by Ingrid Bergman. But it was separate stories. In those days, the writing was the most important thing about television. You know, they would get an umbrella title like Red Letter Day, and that is where the wonderful thing about that Jack Rosenthal wrote, do you know that about the extra? And this was an umbrella title of Childhood, where he got writers like Arthur Hopcroft, and I can't remember the others, to write about somebody's, either their childhood or somebody's childhood. And he decided he wanted to use this music for it. And we played it over and over again at home, and I'll probably cry, but...
a very touching piece.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I reckon he only has to play two bars and that you know him.
Children's Play Song by Bill Evans, from the album From Left to Right. Finally, Anne Reid, let's just mention a little bit more the next thing we're likely to see of you, which is the series you mentioned with Derek Jacobi.
Yes, called Last Tango in Halifax. This has just been decided what it's going to be called. And it's about two families coping with the fact that the two grandparents, Derek and me, are starting a relationship and all the trouble this causes between my daughter, his daughter, and all our relatives.
Why do you think people always think of you as being rather good to defy convention? So we had the mother, where you were having a relationship with a much younger man.
Do I? Really?
Well, they obviously think you're perfect for these parts.
Well, yes. Do you think that is defying convention? I think a lot of people now are starting relationships. I mean, the attitude, thank God, is changing. Mm. I was thinking about this, actually, yesterday, that 100 years ago, everybody was trying to look terribly grown up, weren't they? Mm. Nowadays, it's kind of unfashionable to be grown up. I think the more giddy and childish you are, these older people like to look as if they're a bit daft and full of fun. And 100 years ago, you weren't allowed to do that at all. They're all pretending, I suppose.
But also nice that contemporary writing is prepared to look at human beings and society as it really is.
Well, this writer, Sally Wainwright, has written Scott and Bailey, which is very, very successful at the moment, and she wrote The Braithwaites. And I mean, I have to say, these parts are glorious. I think Derek would agree with me. We just love doing it. We get to jive together at one point.
Well, we really will look forward to seeing that. So, meanwhile, Anne Reid, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Anne Reid was talking to Michael Barclay. Next week's Private Passions is the first of three editions with connections to the Olympic Games. Michael's guest is the businessman and philanthropist Sir Adrian Cadbury, who as a young Cambridge graduate represented Great Britain in the Coxless Four rowing team at the 1952 Helsinki Olympics. That's next Sunday at the same time, midday. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3. The producer of today's programme was Chris Marshall.
The 2012 BBC Proms. Nine symphonies that changed music forever. On Radio 3, Daniel Barenboim conducts the Beethoven symphonies at the BBC Proms. The cycle continues throughout this week and culminates next Friday on the opening night of the 2012 Olympics with the composer's hymn to universal brotherhood, the Choral Ninth. Beethoven, conducted by Barenboim at the BBC Proms. Continuing tomorrow night with the Pastoral and the Fifth Symphony at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
As for today's prom, live from the Royal Albert Hall this afternoon, if you can be lured away from what seems to be the first showing of summer, Antonio Pappano conducts a concert performance of Berlioz's epic opera, The Trojans, telling of the story of the destruction of Troy and of the Trojan warrior Aeneas's quest to found a new dynasty in Italy. With the chorus and orchestra of the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, that's our prom live this afternoon here on BBC Radio 3, starting at 4:30. And during the interval, Paul Allen examines how, despite losing the war, the Trojans have shaped Western culture. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online in high-definition sound. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news read by Lopa Kotari.
Syrian government troops have launched a big offensive to regain control of parts of the capital, Damascus. Activists say three areas of the city are being attacked by tanks and heavy weapons. In the second city, Aleppo, rebel fighters are reported to have gained control of several areas. A new study suggests that at least £13 trillion is invested in secret tax havens by the super-rich around the world. The report was written by James Henry, a former chief economist at the consultancy firm McKinsey, for the Tax Justice Network, which campaigns for what it calls a socially just tax system. Mr. Henry says the tax revenues lost through such offshore accounts is large enough to make a significant difference to the finances of many countries. The people of Norway are attending ceremonies and church services in memory of the 77 people killed by Anders Behring Breivik a year ago. Many of them were teenagers attending a summer camp on the island of Utøya near Oslo. The country's Prime Minister, Jens Stoltenberg, has laid a wreath at the spot in Oslo where a bomb exploded, killing 8 people. He said Breivik had failed in his attempt to destroy Norway's democratic values. The Culture Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, has urged immigration staff to call off a one-day strike on Thursday, a day before the Olympics open. He said the timing of the action over jobs and pay was extraordinary. The leader of PCS Union, Mark Sirotka, said he hoped the walkout could be averted. Barring accident or illness, the cyclist Bradley Wiggins will ride himself into history this afternoon by becoming the first British rider to win the Tour de France. Convention dictates that no one will challenge the race leader on the 20th and final stage into Paris. And the weather, it's another sunny and warm day for much of England and Wales, although it'll become increasingly breezy across more northern areas. It'll be cloudy across Northern Ireland and Scotland, with outbreaks of rain, mainly in western parts, and a strong southwesterly wind. That's the latest BBC News. The time is 1:02.
And it was read by Lopa Kotari. Well, now on Radio 3, today's Early Music Show, which features more from this year's York Early Music Festival. It's introduced by Catherine Bott.
In the mid-1670s, Jesuit missionaries set sail from Spain for the jungles of Bolivia. In their luggage, lots of sacred music to help them in their task of converting the indigenous population to Christianity. The locals were eager to learn and to sing and play, and from the collaboration of Bolivian converts and European clerics arose a new musical style, a fusion of cultures called Mission Baroque. And in 2012, the fruits of that fusion were heard in the north of England, performed by Ashley Solomon's group Florilegium and the singers of the Aracaendar Bolivia Choir.
Oh, yeah.
Thou crowned him with glory and honour, O Lord, and didst set him over the works of thy hands. Words from Psalm 8, set by the Czech composer Johann Josef Ignaz Brentner, whose music found its way to South America to help Bolivian Indians worship a Christian god. That piece opened the concert given in the 2012 York Early Music Festival by the Aracaenda Bolivia Choir and Florilegium, directed by Ashley Solomon. The next composer featured in the concert was Juan de Araujo, who was born in 1646 in Spain, but spent most of his working life in Bolivia as maestro di capilla of the cathedral in La Plata, modern-day Sucre. A typical Spanish villancico, or popular song, with a rhapsodical sacred text about the infant Jesus asleep in the manger, a tiny baby born to save the world.